The Church of God the Eternal presents Good News, Bad News, the seventh message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled The Good News of God's Kingdom, given for the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles in Townsend, Tennessee, October 13th, 2025.
So I've been couching everything I've addressed to you during this feast in the terms of the good news of God's coming kingdom. And so we looked at a lot of different aspects, most importantly, what God said himself about what's coming and why we should get excited about it. It's going to be the best thing to ever happen to the human family when Jesus Christ begins to rule on this earth for 1,000 years and forevermore. And so we've looked at all of those promises, those things that are literally going to come to pass. We've also looked at a number of other tangential topics in relationship to that good news, like how to get more of a handle in our own minds about some of the mysteries of the kingdom of God, that dimension in which God exists that's beyond our understanding, and yet, like by the symbols that God gave us for families, husbands, wives, children, and all that, how we can sample a taste a little bit more, even with our limited capacities. And so, in showing how that supports the fact that it's really, really good news, and then our roles in fulfilling our personal and family obligations in this life actually contributes toward preparing to be a glorious member of that family to come. So all of it is relevant. Everything you're doing and everything you're a part of, according to God's requirements for us as human beings and as members of the church, is very relevant. It's not for nothing, because it is showing our agreement with God, our level of agreement with God, and our desire, literally, to see that kingdom come to pass. So that's all part of the good news. Well, today we're going to talk about bad news, because another way, I think, to emphasize the goodness of the good news is to show the contrast with the good news. And that's what we're going to do today. Jesus Christ, of course, came with good news about the future. That was the gospel message. But the world is full of bad news. And there's a lot of definitions, and I'll give those to you for what I mean by bad. But in essence, the news of the world opposes everything that Christ and his message represents, because the world reflects the enemy of man, Satan the devil, and our carnal minds, which is the same influencer. And so if God says up, our minds and Satan's going to say down. If one says black, the other one says white. If one says inside, the other says outside. It's always going to be opposite. That's how contrary. Then everything in this world by nature is against the good news that God has provided. My question is, can you tell the difference between the real news, the true news, and the fake news? Can you? Why, if you think you can tell the difference, if you think you can discern accurate news versus fake news, why do you think that? Is it because you're that smart? Maybe so. But I will remind you that Satan is a master deceiver. We saw those texts already. Satan the devil is smarter than any one of us. Okay? And he cons himself before us, pawns himself off as an angel of light, which the Bible says. And unless You are using different tools than people of the world in order to make judgments and to discern. You will be deceived, and so will I. So I'm going to challenge you today in the way that you consume news that comes out of the world and on what yardstick you're using to decide it's valuable or it's not valuable. Because there's a lot of deceptive stuff out there. Man is always trying to disguise evil or untrustworthy motivations in the way he presents news. Can you see the intents behind a lot of the stuff that's presented out there? And now, you know, in our age, we have so much more than we ever had in generations before. You know, used to, people would get their news maybe one time a day. 5 o'clock news, you turn on your TV to one of the major broadcast networks, at least in the USA, and then you get your little 30 minutes of news. And in the last several decades, now we've got 24/7 news. You can watch news all day long. You can have multiple cable news stations up on different monitors. You can be trolling social media. Inundated. And let's not forget YouTube. Anybody here use YouTube? There is tons of material out there, all begging for your attention, claiming they have valuable stuff they want to share with you because you need to know this. Your life is going to go miserably wrong if you do not consume this 20-minute or hour-long podcast, video. That's what they tell you. How do you tell the difference and how do you sift through it all? Some of you, you're probably the smartest ones of us all. You don't even turn it on. And I'm still here to tell you, like I did yesterday in the message, you are not wrong if you just tune it out. I admit I'm a news junkie, but I have to keep that in control too. But if you tune it out altogether, I do not believe whatsoever that you are missing something upon which you're going to be judged by Jesus Christ. As I told you yesterday, whatever his command to watch included, it had to apply to members of the true church of God in the first century as much as it does today. And they didn't have newspapers and cable news. So that can't be integral or necessary to a Christian life. But some of us want to know, and we do keep up with certain things that are going on. But you need to be able to sift. If you're going to look at it, if you're going to troll through stuff on the internet, you need a benchmark, some yardstick by which you sift, otherwise you will be deceived. And a number of you have been. I'm going to make some of you mad today, by the way. I'm just telling you in advance, and I love you. I love you dearly. And I'm taking my life in my hands because I'm going to tackle some of your sacred cows. Just prepare. Bad news. What do I mean by bad news? Bad news can be either negative news with the intent to create fear. And don't you see that? I mean, clickbait to try and get you to click on an article to read either a newspaper article online or a YouTube video because they're proposing to tell you something that's putting you at danger. And you need to consume their material, or you're in big trouble, playing off of fear. Or bad news can just be outright lies being fostered as truth to achieve some other end, including politics. Let's call that propaganda. Is there propaganda out there? You bet. Can you tell the difference? Can you sift out what's true from the lies? Maybe. What are some examples from the Bible of bad news? And I'm saying untrustworthy news, news intended to create a fear response in the target audience, or stuff that's just outright lies. I'm going to give you two examples. Let's start in Numbers 13. Numbers 13, 26, and this is the Israelites, God through many miracles has brought them out of Egypt, saved them multiple times, entered into a covenant with them at Mount Sinai, and now brought these millions of Israelites to the edge of the promised land. And remember what happened? They sent spies to recon the promised land. They crossed the Jordan River and they spent a number of days searching out the land in advance, find out what they're going to be in for. I'll pick it up in verse 26. God tells Moses to send these spies to search out the land. After 40 days of gathering intelligence, Joshua and Caleb come back with this whole host of spies. Joshua and Caleb tell one story, and all the other ones tell a different story. And yet they had the same experience. Verse 26 of Numbers 13, they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel into the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. So they brought back samples of the produce that was growing there, show how fruitful it was. Verse 27, and they told him and said, we came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it flows with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. So there was proof. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land. The cities are walled and very great, and moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. So it's a doomsday report. Verse 30, and Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it. Don't be afraid, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, all the rest of the spies, besides Joshua, the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land. That's how it's termed. Their report was called an evil report, because it was a bad news report. They brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eats up the inhabitants thereof. It's dangerous. It's fraught with peril. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the son of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. That's how small and piddly we were. And so we were in their sight. So there was a news report. Those who are claiming to know and to inform others. Trust me, I'm telling you the facts. You can take this to the bank, because my interpretation is accurate. We can't cross the Jordan River. We'll be annihilated by these giants. Okay, now the people. Then they heard Caleb. Caleb said, don't listen to it. We can do this. We got God on our side. How did the host of the Israelites respond? The ones who were consuming the news, they got the news reports. How did they respond? Numbers 14, verse 1. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. Sounds like they believed the negative news, the fake news. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. Big surprise there. They were willing to murmur at a drop of a hat. Now they're doing it again. And the whole congregation said unto them, "Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in the wilderness? And wherefore hath the Eternal brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt?" And they said one to another, "Let us make a captain and let us return into Egypt." So now they're becoming militant. They took this evil report by these spies, adopted their interpretation, and they decided they knew what to do in order to save themselves. Now they're going to act on the news they have consumed. How'd that work out? Not very well. Then God had a reply to Moses concerning those who believed the fake news, who responded in fear. They gave in to the fear that was intended by the ones who gave the evil report of the land. Verse 20. And the Eternal said, "I have pardoned according to thy word." So Moses said, "Please don't wipe them out." And he says, "I'm not going to kill them." Verse 21, "But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Eternal." Amazing how many times this comes up, and you can read right over it. But God intends to get the credit. Well, what did that have to do with anything? He had already brought them out by a great miracle and made a nation out of slaves. He destroyed Pharaoh and the entire Egyptian army by opening the sea and closing the sea on him. Wiped out the most powerful army on the face of the earth in the day. Kept them alive with manna in the wilderness. Gave them water out of a rock. Made a covenant with them. Saved them so many times from the Amalekites and the other threats. And they never learned to trust him. Miracle after miracle after miracle, and they never learned to trust him. And here again is just the next advent of that faithlessness, because God made promise to give them this land. So don't worry about the people, the Canaanites who live there now. The same God who's already showed he's willing to save you and to promote you and to give you victories, he's going to give this to you as well. And once again, they said, "We don't believe it. We don't believe it. Yeah, he saved us here and he gave us there, but we don't believe it now." "As truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Eternal." He's looking for people who will actually believe him and trust him and give glory to him. Not just with some sing-song admonition from the mouth. The proof by the actions that we take show that we believe him and we trust him. "Because all those men," verse 22, "which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times." You can go back and try it. It's not totally easy to identify the 10 specific times, but you can get most of them, if not all of them. 10 provocations of refusing to trust God or to give him credit. And this was the 10th. "Have tempted me now these 10 times and have not hearkened to my voice." Verse 23, "surely," now God makes a pronouncement, "they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it, except for one," two, only one's listed here, but we know Joshua, "but my servant Caleb," verse 24, "but my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land wherein he went and his seed shall possess it. His children were going to possess it. We know Joshua did because Joshua was the one who led them. So Joshua and Caleb were the only two out of that entire first generation who actually received the reward of the promised land. Everyone else of that first generation, and as we know, it was those who were 20 and older at the time of this provocation, they died in the wilderness over the ensuing 38 years or so. Total of 48 years they were in the wilderness from the time they came out. This was probably about 2 years in. So another 38 years they wandered until they all died. And then it was the children who were under age 20 or under, who during that 38 years grew to be adults. They were the ones who went in and possessed it. So God made an example out of the faithless. And in this case, it's because they believed fake news. They believed the fake news that came from the spies who had an agenda for how they couched their report. So that's one example of an evil report. One more, different situation. This one's in Jeremiah 28. Jeremiah 28, we'll read verses 1 through 4. This is now, if you want to call it a showdown, between the prophet Jeremiah and a prophet named Hananiah. So this one now is not the same kind of evil report or fake news. This is now someone who proposes to tell you a fact with authority, and it's a bald-faced lie. Jeremiah 28, verse 1, and it came to pass the same year in the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the fourth year and in the fifth month. And understand, at this time, the Babylonians have already invaded Israel. They've already hauled off a number of the Jews to Babylon. They've already sacked the temple and taken all of the very valuable implements of gold as booty and hauled it back to Babylon. Remember, the Jews were taken in two different waves. So only the first wave has happened. A lot of Jews have still been left in Jerusalem. Okay? Now, Jeremiah was sent by God to tell them the truth about why they were suffering because of their sins, which is why he allowed Nebuchadnezzar to come in there. All right? So they had an opportunity to respond, which they didn't. Jeremiah was the unhappy prophet who always had bad news for Israel. But his bad news was true. His news of gloom and doom came from God. So it was bad news. It was news people didn't want to hear, but it was accurate news. But they hated him for it. And what do you do with a messenger that brings you negative news? You want to crucify the messenger. But that was reliable news. Now Hananiah comes on, claiming to be a prophet in the name of God, with a different message contradicting Jeremiah. Okay? That Hananiah, the son of Azur, the prophet, which was a Gibeon, spake unto me in the house of the Eternal, and this is Jeremiah telling it. So Jeremiah is in the temple with the priests, and now Hananiah comes on the scene because he has a message for Jeremiah in the audience of the priests. Spake unto me in the house of the Eternal, in the presence of the priests and of all the people, saying, thus speaketh the Eternal of hosts, the God of Israel, saying, I have broken the yoke of the king of Babylon. This is what Hananiah is saying. He says further, verse 3, within 2 full years will I bring again into this place all the vessels of the Eternal's house that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, took away from this place and carried to Babylon. He says, within 2 years, all of that booty they stole from us out of our temple, God's going to restore and bring it all back. We're going to receive the blessing of God to be free from dominion by the Babylonians. Verse 4, and I will bring again to this place Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, who was the king of the royal family, who was also taken to Babylon. They're saying, well, he's going to be restored. With all the captives of Judah, which included, by the way, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they had all been taken in the first wave. So Hananiah says, in the name of God, they're all going to get to come back home. They went to Babylon, saith the Eternal. Saith the Eternal. He's speaking in the name of God. So he's claiming to be a faithful prophet of the one true God to tell them what's going to happen in the future. And it's a good news prophecy, isn't it? Glory be, God is going to bring back all our stolen stuff and our kidnapped people. Within 2 years, it's going to be happy day. For I will break the yoke of the king of Babylon. Now, did that happen? No. Because God intentionally sent them into captivity to humble them because of their idolatry and their Sabbath breaking. And they had not repented one iota. Which is why ultimately Nebuchadnezzar came in with a second wave, destroyed the temple, the whole city of Jerusalem, and took the whole lot of them into captivity to Babylon. That was the end result. So you and I know the end of the story. But at this time, they didn't. So the Jews, they have inquiring minds, and they want to know, and they're looking for a news source they can trust. Now here's Hananiah. He's got his own YouTube channel. And he's got all this information to give. Trust me, I'm telling you the facts. And Jeremiah's going, it's not what God's telling me. Jeremiah waits for God's inspiration. He holds his tongue, but waits for God's inspiration directly. God answers him, and then in verse 15, once Jeremiah knows. See, it would have been great. You know, if God had really inspired Hananiah, they're going to get all the people back. They're going to be free from the bondage of the Babylonians. That would have been wonderful. But God reveals to Jeremiah, not going to happen. So now, with authority, Jeremiah can go back. Verse 15, then said the prophet Jeremiah unto Hananiah the prophet, hear now, Hananiah, the Eternal hath not sent thee. In other words, he's saying, Hananiah, you're a liar. You're fake news. But thou makest this people to trust in a lie. You've given a happy sing-songy report about the future, which everybody wants to be true, but it's not true. You're lying. Therefore, verse 16, thus saith the Eternal, behold, I will cast thee from off the face of the earth. So this, now Jeremiah is not just acting out. God inspired him. Under the circumstances, God was going to do something to reassert who it was he was inspiring. Who was a faithful prophet whose message you could take to the bank? And so Jeremiah says, behold, I will cast thee from off the face of the earth. This year thou shalt die. He says to Hananiah, you're lying to the people, and as a result, you're going to die this year because you have taught rebellion against the Eternal. Because it was God who said, you must submit to the Babylonians. I sent them. They're under my authority. If you resist, you're resisting me.
But where are the people of the Lord? We have a right to be free.
You have a right to be free if you're obeying. You have a right to the blessings if you show honor and respect to God. If you show disrespect and you commit idolatry and all form of rebellion, then you have no right whatsoever. And so God was going to force them to be subjected to the Babylonians. And he said, that's going to happen. The best thing you can do is deal with your new reality and make the best of it. And you know what happened 70 years later? Then God did bring a remnant of them back out of Babylon, back to Jerusalem. But it's God's timing, not man's. So Jeremiah said, because you've given this false report, you've lied to the people, you're going to die this year. And in essence, he was putting his own credibility as a prophet of God at stake, whether this would or would not happen. Verse 17, so Hananiah the prophet died the same year, in the seventh month, the very month you and I are celebrating this Feast of Tabernacles right now. So it happened. And then they knew, didn't they? Hananiah was fake news. They wanted to believe it, but he told them a lie. Jeremiah had the accurate report, even though it was the news they hated and did not want to believe. But Jeremiah told them the truth. Now, how would you have sorted? If you were there at the time, oh, you would have recognized Jeremiah for who he was? Well, I don't claim I would have. A slick snake oil salesman like Hananiah comes along and he talks a good game and he tells me what I want to hear it the way I want it to be, I would have believed him. I think our best lesson is not to presume that we would have naturally picked the right side. But the fact that you and I, by nature, are vulnerable to deception. No matter how smart you are, you can be deceived. Unless you're using the right yardstick by which to measure. How then should you sift all of the information that inundates you in this world today? If you're going to consume news of the world and all these periodicals, YouTube channels, cable news, how do you sift? One, what do you spend your time on? Why do you spend your time on it? And how do you decide if it's got any credibility or not? I'm going to give you three basic categories that you can use as a yardstick. I'm sharing with you the one that I use for myself. Okay? And then you can take it or leave it. You can decide I'm all wet, I don't know what I'm doing, and you can use your own. But I come from a standpoint of believing that I can be deceived if I am not very careful. Okay? And I don't want to be deceived. So I'm going to share with you the yardstick I use to sift all these inputs we have in this modern world. Number one, never forget that all men are liars. Maybe the most important one. Never forget. All human beings are liars. They all have an agenda. They have a reason to make other people believe them, the line that they're pitching. Okay? Can I back that up with the Bible? Yeah. Jeremiah 17, 9. You know this one? Jeremiah 17, 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Well, that's just the heart of those bad people. No. The human heart, including yours and mine, by nature, we are deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Human beings won't admit it. As the called of God, you've been taught it. It's part of the faith once delivered. What is human nature, really? Where does it originate? And what's the content? Who can know it? You can know it. You can know it because it's been revealed. The rest of the world, they all have this Pollyanna idea about human nature. The socialists and the communists do. Did you realize that communism is predicated upon a belief that human nature is good? You might have never known that. I don't want to get too far afield on that, but the reason they think a communist totalitarian system would work is that that if you just provide the right environment for human beings with wise leaders at the top who control everything, that everyone, their goodness in man would come out and everyone would share and share alike. From each according to his need, to each according to his ability. That everyone would be willing to work very, very, very hard to produce for others and only take the minimum amount that they need. If you had the right government, people would get along and it'd be wonderful. See, it's a belief that's just the right kind of management at the top, and then all our goodness as human beings would come out. How foolish. Capitalism, by contrast, is predicated on the belief that human nature is very good. And that's why it's a better system. Because capitalism then tries to give incentives to selfish human beings to be good members of society. Okay? So it's like you can work hard and keep the majority of what you earn for you and your family if you follow a certain number of rules for the good of society. Now, which one do you think reflects human nature better? So how many people in this world do you think understand that simple truth? Very few, and especially the youth. Why do you think so many young people flock to communism? Because they want to believe human nature is so good. And they have to live long enough to figure out, no, it ain't. They grow up eventually. Some of them do. And come to believe human nature is not so good. I think a system, you know, that recognizes that is better. Mm-hmm. That's not even my topic. Sorry about that. Psalm 58, verse 1. Do ye indeed speak righteousness, O congregation? Spoken to Israel, but applies to all humanity by extension. Do you indeed speak righteousness? Do you really tell the truth? Is your word to be trusted, O congregation? Do you judge uprightly, O ye sons of men? And what's God's answer? Yea, in heart you work wickedness. Let me tell you what you really are. You work wickedness. You weigh the violence of your hands in the earth. The wicked are estranged. Oh, just those bad people. All human beings. That's who the wicked are in God's eyes. By nature, that's what we are. The wicked are estranged from the womb. Which also kicks in the head this idea that we're created neutral by God and then we just quickly become polluted by the influence of Satan the devil that turns us bad. That's a philosophy. The devil made me do it, otherwise I'd be okay. And if that's true, then why crucify yourself? Why submit to this Christian process of self-crucifixion to put on the mind of Christ if your natural mind is not so bad? The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. Oh, you mean those innocent little babies? Oh, they're so cute. Yeah, and they got lying natures. So said God. We either believe it or we don't believe it. Now, if that's a fact, that should shade everything concerning what you receive from people that are trying to tell you they know the truth and they want to help you. If you think you have a new source in this world that is trustworthy, You are showing yourself to be naive and foolish. Now, you can glean certain facts, and I do. But I look at a number of different sources, and I compare, and I make my own choices. How should you weigh? If you start from the idea that you're being lied to, okay, you're at least ahead of the game. But let me tell you something, let me tell you a particular problem of Church of God members. By and large, most of you believe in conspiracies because you believe human beings are liars. And because you want to believe that the government and everybody in it is lying to you, then you are inclined to believe the conspirators that are trying to reveal the lies of the government. And you do not take into consideration, as you should, that they're liars too. So you will not fall for some lies, and you'll fall for the other lies. I'm here to tell you none of them are trustworthy. You better be looking at every single one of them with a jaundiced eye. There is a motivation behind every single article out there, including the right wing, conservatives, who you might agree with more. They have an agenda too, and they're liars. Much as the liberals, the communists. But what we have a tendency to do is we end up picking a side. Kind of like deciding to root for a sports team. I don't even follow professional sports anymore. I used to, and I got fed up with it, which is a big deal. I don't think my wife thought I ever would. But you pick a news source or a politician or something, and now you're going to pick them like your favorite sports team. And now you're going to follow that, and you believe whatever they say. And anybody who opposes them, they're your enemies. And it's almost as if it becomes no different than, you know, you watch your team play, and if the referee throws the flag against your team, oh, that ref is biased. No matter whether it was a good call or not, it was against your team, so the ref is wrong. But if the ref throws the flag on the opposing team, even if it's very questionable, oh, good call, ref. Do you see it? Do we do that? Of course we do it. Because we attach ourselves emotionally to one of these entities. Well, we do it with news sources in the world as well. We hitch our wagons to some person, some personality, talk radio show host, a politician, or whatever it may be, and now we invest ourselves emotionally in supporting that character. I highly encourage you not to do it. Or to the extent that you have done it, to pull away from that. So that's number one in my three-part yardstick, so that you don't get deceived. Start from the premise that everyone's lying to you, including the ones that are trying to point out the lies of the other side. They're lying too. Okay? Number two. This is where I get myself in trouble. But it's under the heading, does it matter? Before you even invest your time and your energies in the deep dives into what are the facts versus the fiction, does it matter? How will getting to the truth on that particular topic help you? In other words, so what? This is my so what list. Is it worth your time? What kind of news reports do you spend your time consuming? What kind of podcasts, what kind of YouTube videos? Here are examples of topics that are not worth your time. I'm glad you're not holding rotten tomatoes. Number one, 9/11 conspiracies. This is an example. Now, what I think is true. Was 9/11, September 11, 2001, an inside job? I think probably it was. But I'm not going to spend my time on it. I think there's a lot of material out there. There's even been some recent stuff coming out. And I looked at some snippets of it, but I'm not going to spend all my time going down that rabbit hole. I mean, things like, why did those buildings pancake like a controlled demolition? Why did Building 7 go down? It wasn't hit. And then you look at who the Arab terrorists were and their connections to the CIA and everything. No, okay, I'm not going to do it. Maybe so, maybe not. Maybe so, maybe not. But I ask you my question. So what? It doesn't affect me. And I'm certainly not going to hitch myself emotionally to try and convince other people one way or the other. There's nothing in it. Again, I assume everybody's lying, including the government. Now, I can look at the results of 9/11 back away to 10,000 feet. And what happened because of 9/11, we got the Patriot Act. We got government intrusion like we never had before under the auspices of making us safer. That's the biggest indication to me that there could have been, might have been, pre-knowledge of individuals in our government who could have stopped it and did not do it for reason. But I'm telling you, I don't consider it worth my time and energy. Again, I'm just assuming everybody's lying. Okay, and then I move on. I got better things to do with my time. So again, 9/11 conspiracy, so what? What's another one? Chemtrails. Chemtrails. Oh, I've taken some flack on this. Oh, but look at all the stuff in the news today about geoengineering. Did you know there's a difference between the chemtrail conspiracies from the 1990s and geoengineering? Geoengineering is real, okay? Which is why you have government entities who are weighing in on it. I am not saying, and in fact, from the time that human beings created airplanes, just about they've been finding ways to drop things from airplanes, okay? Like crop dusters. Okay, crop dusting from airplanes to put fertilizers on fields. But that's deadly chemicals. So I'm not saying that human beings don't drop deadly chemicals from airplanes. But the difference is, what's the purpose? Is there really this vast conspiracy to kill all humanity by dropping absolute poisons on the entire population centers of the earth, or at least in this country? From all commercial airplanes? No, that's not geoengineering. Geoengineering is where they send up specific airplanes with a mission, like the most recent ones are those who believe in climate change, man-made climate change, and now to try and mitigate the effect of the sun, they're going to blanket chemicals in the atmosphere to reflect the sunlight back so less sunlight hits the earth, and they think that's going to make things cooler. That's real, okay? Limited areas where they've done this, which is why you've got certain states like the state of Tennessee where the politicians have said, you ain't doing that here. Okay, that's real. But that is not this crazy idea that every time you look up in the sky and you see a vapor trail behind a jet, that's proof that your government's trying to kill you. And I will tell you that's absurd because the chemtrailers violate every principle of physics to try and make their point. That's how I know. They claim there is no way for there to be an innocent vapor trail behind a jet. And I know that's absurd. So I allow for the possibility human beings are dropping stuff from planes. In fact, what about cloud seeding? Human beings have been doing cloud seeding for a long time to try and create rain in areas where there's no rain. They do this in the Middle East, United Arab Emirates, very arid conditions. They literally will fly chemicals through clouds to try and turn a white puffy cloud into a rain cloud. So yeah, human beings put chemicals in the air. But this idea that every time you see a trail in the air, it's a conspiracy of your government to kill you, and they're killing themselves and their families too, makes no sense. I've seen these trails, you know, I fly all over the world. And if the intent is to kill people, then why do I see trails behind other planes out over the empty ocean? That's kind of a waste of chemicals. Oh, they say, oh, but the trails you see today are different than the ones of years ago. Because these trails last and last and won't go away. Sometimes, and sometimes they go away within 5 seconds. I see them all. Pay attention to the sky. It's atmospheric conditions, dew point, humidity, that affects whether a plane rushing through at 500 miles an hour literally creates an artificial cloud. Are there innocent trails behind planes? Yes, there are, and anybody who tries to tell you no is lying. I call him out as a liar. But it's on my list of so what? What if it's true? A vast conspiracy of every commercial airline pilot and its crew. When they load up for fuel at the next airport stop, they also load up all these deadly chemicals to drop on you during the next flight. What if that's true? What are you going to do about it? I had one well-meaning individual, and I love him to death, but he was so steeped in this, and trying to spread it to other brethren in the church, which is why I weighed in on it, by the way. And I said, and I argued with him for 2 hours and got nowhere. And I finally said, what if you're right? What should we do? I said, how do we protect ourselves? Well, he said, oh, you can't protect yourself. Because those particles in this stuff that they're raining on us is so minute, you can't even protect it if you're wearing a hazmat suit. Really? Then why do I care? I can't protect myself. Why waste my time on it? Oh, because we need to all be contacting our representatives in government to tell them to stop doing this. Time out. We're part of the Church of God, and we don't get involved in politics. We don't vote, and we don't get politically active. We're not trying to save the world in its current state. We're hoping for the return of Jesus Christ. You see, so in that particular case, the chemtrail thing came down to wanting to activate members of the church to get involved in politics. And I went, bingo, not going to do it. Psalm 91, verse 7 says, 1,000 shall fall at thy side and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. This is the case. Don't worry about the stuff you can't control. If the government's trying to kill you, just live your life in faith, keep your nose clean, and focus on what is your responsibility, and let God do the rest. And don't get yourself all worked up, overall, there are tons of conspiracies going on. People are lying in the shadows. We have no idea of a lot of them. But I just can't tell which of the conspiracies are legit versus which ones are contrived. Because they're lying about the lying conspiracies. So I can't tell in many cases. And I'm not hitching my wagon to any of them. What's another one? Moon landing conspiracies. Okay, where do I stand? I absolutely believe we landed on the moon. By the way, if you don't believe that it was a major NASA conspiracy to lie about landing on the moon, they didn't lie once, they lied 6 times. Because they didn't do it just once in 1969, they did it 6 different times before 1972. That's a pretty effective conspiracy. What's my number one reason to believe we did it? Because our enemy said we did it. The USSR said we did it, and they had every reason not to want us to do it. The Soviets said we did it. They confirmed it. The Chinese did. The Indian Space Agency. They're confirming it now because you've got more countries that are actually sending moon landers. You've got four different countries now have actually landed probes on the moon. They haven't landed humans like the Americans did, but they're landing all kinds of things. And they're putting satellites in orbit around the moon with cameras. And guess what these other countries are finding when their cameras look at the moon surface? The Apollo landing sites. There's pictures. Oh, but they're part of the conspiracy too. They're in cahoots with NASA. Okay, I'm not going to convince. But if anybody cares about that, I will refer you in private to a 90-minute new YouTube video which came out at the beginning of 2025. And this one, and he's really, really good at addressing virtually every single one of the conspiracy theories about why it was a fake and showing you why it was real. There's answers to all of them, including the why the pictures look the way they do, everything else. There's a lot of detail. What I find and what I've dealt with many times for years of people in the church, they will grab onto these things of the conspirators, and I say, have you ever looked at the other side? Let me show you a reference that refutes the side you're listening to. Look at both sides. But most important on top of everything, so what? What does it matter? How does it affect you in your life? Don't make it an issue of contention, especially with the brethren. If you ask me, I'm going to tell you what I believe. But so what? Or what's another one? Bigfoot.
Don't you love this?
Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, whatever you want to call it, abominable snowman. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there. What's my number one reason to doubt, besides my natural doubtfulness? Did you know that the majority of people who believe in Bigfoot believe that Bigfoot is a creature that is a cross between a human and an animal? Did you know that? Now, do you believe that's true? Well, if you believe that's true, then you do not believe the truth of the Bible. You don't believe our doctrine. Because God made every creature to reproduce after its own kind. And there is no such thing as creatures of different kinds as God considers them to be able to produce offspring. It's against nature. Oh, but look at the number of beliefs going back thousands of years. So you think Bigfoot's the only one? Because I hear the argument, yeah, but Bigfoot has been in lore of humanity for so long, there's got to be something to it. Well, let me challenge that. What about mermaids? You know, lore about mermaids has been in, you know, have been talked about and documented for 1,000 years or more. Do you believe mermaids are real? Half fish, half woman? My dear friends, that's an abomination. That's a lie right out of the mind of Satan is what that is. There is no such thing. There's no mermaids. There's no mermen. There's no leprechauns. There's no trolls. Human beings love to make up fantasy creatures. They do. Human minds are very creative when we come up with all this stuff. We make it up. And we carry it down for generations. So the fact that something's been in somebody's lore for 1,000 years doesn't give it credibility whatsoever. I'm even going to talk about Loch Ness Monster. So my main deal, and so again, I ask you the question, if you believe Bigfoot might be real, I hope at least you believe it's not a man. or a part man. Okay? But again, I couch it to say, so what? I'm not going to waste my time on it. What about all the hoopla around, let's say, COVID vaccines? Now, if you're a member of the Church of God and you have faith in God, then you didn't get a COVID vaccine, even when the government tried to pressure you, make you feel guilty, actually limit where you could go. I was limited for what, a 2-year period on where I could fly around the world, places I would go to visit God's brethren. All of a sudden, certain countries said, if you don't have the vaccine, you can't enter our country. I'm not going to give in to that. So according to our doctrine, no, you don't put some man-made poison, some drug in your veins. No childhood vaccines, no nothing. So if the COVID vaccine came along in, what, the end of 2020, into 21? Now, I have no doubt, and I bet you there's someone under the hearing my voice who actually took the COVID vaccine, because you didn't have to tell anybody in the church if you did. But maybe you got some benefit. Maybe you were afraid and you gave in. Now what's coming out? The stuff was totally ineffective for its claimed purpose and is actually responsible for all of these diseases in formerly healthy people. That's all coming out now. So, I'm still seeing all this stuff on the internet. Oh, just revealed the COVID vaccine and this study that was suppressed by Big Pharma and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, they're all liars. I already could have told you that. So what? Well, know what if you didn't have the vaccine anyway? So I'm not spending all my time. I know they're liars. I hope they get exposed, but I don't expect justice in this world. So how much time are you going to spend on trolling through sources? I think it's a wasted effort. Just assume they're all lying, because they are. Everyone producing videos or articles are seeking to merchandise you. Now, I'm not saying that some are not well-intentioned, because they think they're doing a public service, okay? But the reality is they have that platform because they want you to put your eyes on it. They want clicks because they get paid for clicks. They're trying to make a business out of whatever it is their message is all about. So understand, they're trying to make money off of you, even if they're sincere. I never forget that. So the third point. So number one was never forget all men are liars. Number two, does it even matter? So what? Number three, does it violate an element of the faith once delivered? Matthew 24:21, remember, in the midst, I read part of this concerning Christ's warning to the disciples. Verse 21 says, for then shall be great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, nor ever shall be. There's going to be horrendous times coming when everything is in chaos. And I guarantee you, people are going to be claiming they know the answers. Here, I've got the keys. Come and follow me. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Verse 23, then, in the midst of all that chaos and the fear, the real natural fear, plus the fear-mongering that comes out of those with evil tidings or evil reports. If any man say unto you, lo, here's Christ, or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Do you take that seriously? God himself said, their lies are going to be so believable that it is highly possible even to deceive God's people. I suggest we all take that very seriously and not think we're smarter than everybody else. And we have a special meter in our brain that allows us to discern good from evil. If you instead will assume you are gullible enough to be deceived, and then you will use the right criteria for judging, then you've got the right priorities. Verse 25, behold, Christ says, I've told you before. Wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he's in the desert. Don't go. Go not forth. Behold, he's in the secret chamber. Believe it not. For as the lightning comes out of the east and shines even to the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. He's not going to come secretly. And yet there's splinter groups. Groups that came out of our same parent church that are in essence saying that Christ is already here in secret. And they have married this up with like prophecies on the place of safety. So they think they're going to go to a place of safety and Christ is going to be there in advance with them before his visible coming. And I'm like going, whoa, whoa, whoa. There's the kind of deception that could snag God's people. And it's fake news. Christ is the one that says, if somebody says that, don't buy it. Psalm 112, verse 4. Psalm 112, beginning in verse 4, unto the upright there arises light in the darkness. The upright is talking about those who are following God. Their priority is God and his laws. That is the standard they're setting in their behavior, what they desire. That's whom God calls the upright. Unto the upright there rises light in the darkness. You have an opportunity to see and discern things that are totally missed by the people in the world, even though you're not as smart as them. I'm sorry, I'm not being disrespectful to you, but God did call the weak and the base. We even sang the hymn before this service that said so. Primarily, he called, by the world standard, the underachievers. The ones who are looked down on, not the highest IQs, not the high achievers. That's who he chose to call into the church. And yet you have the capacity to be smarter than everybody. Not by leaning on your own wisdom, but literally following God's playbook. That's what will make you smart. That's what will make you enlightened. Unto the upright, there arises light in the darkness. He is gracious and full of compassion and righteousness. Thank God for that. A good man, verse 5, shows favor and lendeth. He will guide his affairs with discretion. That means you're basically following the Ten Commandments, love toward God and love toward fellow man. You're watching out for other people, not trying to take advantage of them. Verse 6, surely he shall not be moved forever. In what way? When someone comes along and tries to scare you into a response, I've got inside information. You're in great danger unless you do this or you do that. And you get to appraise it according to your godly checklist and you say, no thanks. I'm not worried about that. Surely he shall not be moved forever. The righteous shall be in everlasting remembrance. He shall not be afraid of evil tidings. Are you afraid of evil tidings? The latest headline that tells you to worry about something and it's going to reveal to you what you should worry about? Or in general, are you checking every one of those things against what you know concerning the truth of God? I do that with diet a lot. Oh, the latest study on food. And it's all a bunch of rubbish. I have reconfirmed so many times the value of the guidelines we learned through Mr. Herbert Armstrong decades ago that have stood the test of time. And new studies come out to say, oh, low-fat diet Don't drink milk. Don't eat eggs. Don't use butter. Fats are bad. And that goes on for several decades, and the health of the population gets worse. And then new studies come out, oh, guess what? Oh, we were wrong. Those natural fats are actually good and necessary for health. Oh, what do you know? If I just listened to Mr. Armstrong, I would have already had it. And some of us did. We didn't stop eating eggs. We didn't stop eating butter. But if I'd listened to the news and the experts, I would have whipsawed from one to the other. He shall not be afraid of evil tidings. Danger on the horizon. I'm here to tell you. Nope. His heart is fixed. You have a compass. You have a spiritual compass which guides you. It keeps you on the true course, not because you're smarter than anyone else, but because God has blessed you and promised. Trusting in the eternal. That's what that is. Verse 8, his heart is established. You're not running willy-nilly, subject to being moved here and there and yonder based on a new report, a new conspiracy theory, because you know it doesn't matter. His heart is established. He shall not be afraid. Don't let these people induce you into a fear response. They're doing it to make profit off of you. Until he sees his desires upon his enemies, which is through the intervention of Jesus Christ. So you and I need to become wise consumers of worldly news, which means the ability to discern between what matters and what does not, and to check it against the godly principles we already know by the faith once delivered. You could sift out a whole lot of lies if you'll just do that. Final text, Philippians 4, verse 8. Again, I consume news, I keep up with a certain amount of stuff, but do like me and don't ever forget, more of your mind should be taken on positive, uplifting things. I'm not saying Pollyanna, like bury your head in the sand, but Philippians 4, verse 8 tells us how to have a healthy mind. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of a good report. It means reputable. Whatever things are reputable, if there be any virtue, meaning intrinsic excellence, and if there be any praise, think on these things.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented Good News, Bad News, the seventh message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled The Good News of God's Kingdom, given for the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles, in Townsend, Tennessee, October 13th, 2025. Thank you.